And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
Right. I'm just going to play
that's
some
craziness.
When are you tell me we're starting?
We started.
By the way, either give it raw awesome. Or don't give it at all.
Right. They edited you.
Yeah, they edited out some of my statements, and I was, it was just distasteful.
You will not be edited here, sir.
That's right.
So like a fist away from the mic, and we're good. And thank you for doing this.
Not at all. No problem.
You are Pat Sheehan.
I am Patrick Sheehan.
You are Pat. Do you like Patrick? Pat, Mister. Soon to be senator. What are you?
Pat's fine.
Pat, okay, Pat. And you're running for Senate.
I am
for New York State. District
New York State Senate District 41.
41.
41 is all of Greene County, all of Columbia County. It's Northern Dutchess, so from the Columbia County line to Connecticut, to the Hudson River, down to the town of Poughkeepsie. So it's High Park, out to Dover, Amenia, and then the northern section of the county. And then all of eastern Ulster County. It's like an upside down L. It goes from Shandaken on the western end of the county along the Greene County border over to Saugerties and then down to Marlborough. So it's eastern Ulster.
You seem like a very nice man. Why do you want to run?
I ran 2 years ago for pretty much the same reason I'm running now. My youngest child is 11 years old, and 2 years ago, I was offended that the Democrat Socialists of America essentially hijacked an assembly seat. I had been a Democrat for 18 years, and whether you liked Kevin Cahill or you didn't like Kevin Cahill, lots of people are on both sides of that fence. Kevin did his job for the district, and he also gerrymandered his district to such a fine point that the DSA saw an opportunity, and they maximized that opportunity by bringing, you know, a member of their group here and moving her into the district. And, you know, she is now our seated assembly member. And I'm offended by that. It's amazing to me that as you look at the Harris Wall signs and the Pat Ryan signs and even the Hinchey signs, you know, they're white and blue, a little bit of green for Hinchey. Sarah Hanna's signs are bright yellow with red lettering, which is the Chinese Communist Party's colors. She is unapologetically Marxist communist, wears her yellow peasant dress like it's her uniform of the day. And so that's how I wound up running in 22. I had been a Democrat until 2018. I was in a position where I recognized the jeopardy that our assembly member was in when he was primaried. And apparently I was the canary in the coal mine because no one else saw it. And they all said, oh, Kevin will be fine. And then suddenly I had a race to run for the assembly seat. And I gave it, you know, best I could do with the money I raised. I raised about $50,000, which for a first timer is pretty decent. There have been some deep dives into the 22 assembly race. I think if you look carefully, it was the most expensive assembly seat race in New York State history. Kevin Cahill probably spent $125,000 in the primary. I spent about $50,000. And our opponent, Sarah Hanna, between the PAC money and the Tides Foundation, courtesy of Peter Buffett, courtesy of George Soros, she had in excess of $1.2 million for an assembly seat. And the New York Times did a deep dive on it. The State Election Commission looked into it. But again, it was all shell companies, all, you know, non-for-profits or whatever, PACs, whatever you call them. But for the many, nobody leaves Hudson Valley. Nobody leaves Kingston. There's a ton of money. The day of the primary in 22 that Kevin Cahill lost, under 15,000 voters came out in the 103rd Assembly District for that primary.
Okay.
Those are registered Democrats. The day of the primary, Sarah Hanna had over 15,000 individual donations to her campaign account from all over the country, from the Democrat Socialists of America, from chapters and people all over the place. So you're dealing with a very effective and efficient business model when you look at the DSA. During that race...
hold on. Can you hold 1 second?
Yeah.
I'm just going to turn you up a little bit.
Oh,
quick.
Sure.
No, no.
It's my fault. I just want to make sure. Sorry.
Can you hear me now? Oh, much better. Yay.
Better, right? Yeah. Okay. There we go.
So during that race, during early voting, which, by the way, starts on the 26th of October, during that race, during early voting, a woman from the DSA from Virginia sat on a chair on Broadway every day handing out her material as people were walking into the early voting site. And, you know, came here specifically to support another member of the DSA. So anyway, that's how I got into the race in 22. I felt then, as I do now, that I simply don't want to be represented by these people. New York City, unfortunately, is getting a real lesson in how dangerous that can be, because Jumaane Williams is a heartbeat away from the mayor of New York City. And if Hochul decides to pull him, or if he decides to resign, we have a completely incompetent chief executive who will run the greatest city in the world.
Mm.
So now let's fast forward to 24. I was approached by the Senate to consider running on the Senate line. I was planning to run against Sarah Hanna again, and looked at some of the numbers. In Ulster County, I got 20,000 votes in the 22 cycle. Michelle Hinchey's opponent at the time was Sue Serino, who is now the county executive in Dutchess County.
Right.
Sue got 22,000 votes in Ulster County. So she only had 2,000 more votes than I got in 22. The difference was the way the breakdown of towns in Ulster impact the Senate race versus the Assembly race. Ms. Serino had a 6,000-vote Republican advantage to what I had on the Assembly line. So when you looked at the numbers, unfortunately, Sue did underperform. She was new to Ulster County. She did not have enough boots on the ground. She didn't have enough, familiarity with the county to really effectively run a race. And it cost her. So having gotten 20,000 votes with 6,000 fewer Republican voters, and that's not including the honor rolls, of course, the position was that I would have done better on the Senate line as a brand new person. And that coupled with the fact that we need one Senate seat on the Republican side to break the Dem supermajority, that was really compelling because, mm-hmm. The Assembly, you're never going to take that back from the Democrats. It's historically always been a Democratic body. But the Senate was the line in the sand until 2019. And you had many, Democrat governors and a Democratic New York State Assembly, but you always had the New York State Senate sort of as the balancing point for good government and good governance. Whether you agreed with how they did it, I mean, it was three men in a room for a long time. It allowed a certain balance that we completely have erased since 2019. You said you looked at my website. Daenerys, as the leader in the Senate, put it bluntly that the 2019 session was the most progressive, woke session ever, and took like a bow for it. But no one, unfortunately, did the deep dive. to see how that scrolls out. Now, we got a pause during COVID, but 5 years later, the state is a shambles financially. We keep adding more burden to everyday New Yorkers, well beyond, you know, whatever you think of or whatever the opinions are of the Biden-Harris administration. Just New York alone, due to particularly the Climate Act, the Community Leadership Climate Protection Act, has mandated changes to the way we get our energy. You know, Andrew Cuomo desperately wanting to become the president of the United States, shut down Indian Point prematurely, taking 2,000 megawatts of power that was, you know, providing a lot of reliability and consistency to
for
the 45
grid. 45 years safely, we might
add. You know, I full disclosure, I worked at Indian Point after 9/11 in security over there. There was a tremendous amount of security upgrading after 9/11, which was appropriate.
Right.
You know, prior to 9/11, it was, I think, kind of terrifying from a security envelope perspective. But, you know, I've been inside the containment dome of Indian Point. I know the facility, and I know that the facility was operated safely. But again, that was a hard left move. He had an agenda to become the president before that got derailed, and he supported all of this Green New Deal stuff because that's what the progressive left wanted, and he wanted to become the president. So you've saddled New Yorkers with unattainable goals. We cannot meet those climate goals. Can't. Simply can't be done. And yet we keep beating up our power providers. In this case, we have Central Hudson, but all of them have to meet these mandates. And the chairman of the Public Service Commission at the time basically said, these are unfunded mandates. These costs will be passed on to the ratepayers. There's no other place for this money to come from. Right. And what do you know? That's what we're seeing. Now, did Central Hudson completely screw up the billing thing? Absolutely. I have my own thoughts on how we should attend to that. But, you know, my opponent and Ms. Shrestha have both supported a public takeover of Central Hudson that is has not worked successfully in the past in this state and will simply put more cost on the people who live here. You know, one thing about Central Hudson is they pay their taxes, and they pay a ton of taxes, and that will all disappear. If it becomes public property, all that tax money goes away, not to mention all of the other components, you know. They can't properly put the lines on Broadway. Okay, it looks like someone with epilepsy or you know, Tourette's
right.
rolled out the pavement markings. Okay, the one pharmacy, they've got like a left-hand turn lane and like the straight through lane all screwed up.
It would take me about a year to figure out how to pull in here.
No, no, but I mean, right now, they repaved. So a contractor came in and paved Broadway
right.
from like the high school down to St. Mary's. Did a phenomenal job. And then the city line striping department, I don't know who they are, striped the lines. And it's a complete disaster. They've got barrels up right now. Okay, do you really think that these people can run a power company? To provide power to you in the middle of the summer or the winter. And, you know, what you can say in defense of Central Hudson, without question, every storm, every emergency that we've seen, they have handled very professionally. I recall the two back-to-back ice storms. It crippled the entire region. Everybody got power on within a couple of days. And, you know, they bring crews in from all over the district, all over the area, and they do a good job. I mean, now the billing thing has to be sorted out. It has been so far for the most part, but they've had failures. And Fortis, frankly, I am critical of Fortis. But, you know, a public takeover is insane. And so that's what we've seen. We got a Democrat supermajority in 2019, and – the rollout we're feeling now is the result of that. And as I've said in many interviews and many articles, if you're happy with where we've gone as a state over the last 5 years, then you may as well stick with my opponent and keep that mojo going. If you're like me, if you have less money in your pocket, if your dollars don't go as far as they did in this state in particular, then, you know, I'd appreciate your vote because I'd like to make America moderate again. I'd like to get back to a place where we can unshackle business and allow the capitalist system that created this wealth to work. Okay. Peter Buffett wouldn't be buying radio stations and funding countless socialist opportunities for these people without his father creating that wealth. Okay. George Soros created wealth in our system, and that is what our system is designed to do.
Right.
And that is what these folks want to take away. And they're doing a hell of a job. Okay.
Fair enough. Can I I did go down on your website, and I have really bad news because you all know I'm a Democrat and I don't disagree with much on here. But can I just run through a couple things to see what you think? Okay. Closing in the appointment, we got pain at the pump, we got Lakin's Law, we got. Can you explain what Lakin's Law is?
Essentially, it is the objective is to notify local law enforcement of persons who are in custody who have violated our immigration law status.
Why wouldn't you do that? What can you steel man the other side and say?
I can't. So when I worked in the New York City DA's offices, I worked in New York County in a domestic violence unit during my final year of law school, and I worked in Queens County thereafter. We typically did not notify Immigrations and Customs Enforcement on people who were in the custody of the New York City Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the volume, really. Okay, the we had so many people who were not lawfully here in the criminal justice system,
right,
that it was impractical.
And technically they're innocent at that point.
Correct.
So it would be prejudicial, I guess, too.
Yeah, I mean, there were a number of factors. But, you know, that was when we had law enforcement that actually put people in custody, and judges were given the discretion that we entrust our judges to use to set appropriate bail. So we, you know, when somebody's bad enough, you do see them get identified and transferred to ICE. We saw that, I believe, most recently, the most famous case for that would be when those illegal gang members assaulted police officers.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, even Governor Hochul, with the lowest approval rate, with a lower approval rating than Joe Biden, which is kind of amazing, woke up long enough to say, these guys have to go.
Right.
You know, so, you know, the fact that we have we've been inundated with people who are undocumented, and some of them are really, really bad. So that's an issue that we have to get under control.
I can't understand the – I guess the other side would argue it's a violation of civil rights. I don't understand the other – I don't understand what my side would argue back to that. I don't see the harm in doing it. Once it's been adjudicated, I don't see the harm in doing that.
I can't disagree with you.
All right. Fair enough.
We can agree to agree.
See? It can happen, folks. Oh, my God. Okay. Girls sports. So New York State, listener, if you don't know, New York State Board of Regents gets a proposal that boys can play in girls sports in high school if there's not appropriate team. And you're against that.
Yes, I am.
I am too. What would be the argument? Again, trying to figure out the argument for it would be. So I asked my daughter. My daughter's 16, and I said,
"Where does she go to school?"
Chappaqua.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, fancy.
Yeah. My wife teaches in Chappaqua.
And he's the Democrat.
Right, right. And I'm the Democrat. Exactly.
Well, hey, you're in good company. You got Bill and Hillary down the street.
I could tell you a Bill story that's amazing. So I ask her, like, you know, I understand what I think about this, but give me the other side of the argument, which I guess would be like that a boy deserves an equal opportunity to play a sport, and there's funding there in the school for it, and blah, blah, blah. And she said, he's going to kill people. Well, he was using field hockey as an example.
Field hockey is a dangerous sport, man.
Yeah. And she said, he's going to kill people. And so I don't understand how did, you know, the inner workings. How does a bill like that even get to the point of, what's the premise of it? Equal rights? Is that the premise of it?
Okay, so this is what you get when you have one party rule. I mean, you know, it's one hand clapping, and they can clap as much as they want and as loud as they want. So they did it because they can. That's just what it comes down to. And by the way, Proposition 1 on your ballot will not say Equal Rights Amendment, will not say abortion protection. It will be phrased as a proposition to protect against unequal treatment.
Mm.
That is the title of the proposition.
Mm.
Now, it's like a proposition to protect clean water. Okay.
Who's going to disagree?
Yeah. Hi, I'd like the radioactive water, please.
Right, right.
You know, can I have a sip right out of the containment dome?
I'm going to drink something
point?
That makes me glow.
You know, so who is against clean air or clean water?
Right.
Who can, you know, we're a kind and caring society. Who doesn't want a society that treats people fairly? So right. when you word it as a proposition against unequal treatment, seems perfectly reasonable to me.
Yeah.
Until you actually read what's being protected. And it's not like a normal regulation where it's covered under New York state law. This is changing and cementing into the New York state constitution protections that are going to be almost impossible, if not completely impossible, to roll back.
Right.
You're talking about age. Okay. So what does that mean? When you have a protected class for age, can my 11-year-old
drive?
Petition? No, exactly. Can he petition that he should be allowed to get a driver's license?
Right.
Because if you can't discriminate against age of a minor, so what happens to the laws that are specific to minors? What happens to the laws that what happens to the laws that are specific to offenders who prey on minors?
That's exactly what I was about to say.
Okay, these are...
You can get that if you want.
No.
Okay.
These are real concerns that have to be attended to. And, you know, this is a shoot first and ask questions later kind of proposition.
Right.
So, okay, age is just one component. Sex, sexual orientation, sexual identity, but... and pregnancy outcomes, which they can't define. So, unfortunately, and we've seen it nationally, this is not a new concept. People who get elected or face re-election every 2 years, they don't want to aggravate their constituents. Okay, they don't want to take hard positions that people can attack them on. So, they typically pass legislation that is so nebulous that it must go before the courts. And that is why the third branch of our system of government, the judiciary, has become such a target. Because when our representatives in government do not do their job, we have law that is nebulous. And then it must be determined by courts. And this is exactly what is happening with Proposition 1. Everything in it is going to have to go for judicial review. So all of these issues will come out in the wash, as
right.
they say. So my biggest concern is not the argument that is being used to enshrine a woman's right to choose. Okay, That's been enshrined for a real long time, okay? I've been attacked. In fact, I'd like to thank the Academy and Michelle Henschy for my first hit piece.
Nice.
I mean, hey, she got me $40,000 worth of free advertising. You know, Pat Sheehan said overturning Roe v. Wade was, quote unquote, good, period.
And you didn't say that.
I said, I absolutely said that. But I said more than that. I said overturning Roe v. Wade was good constitutional law, because it was. And I'm sorry, there's only one person in this race between Michelle and I who actually has a Juris Doctorate degree. I went to Albany Law School. Ask any lawyer worth their salt about Roe v. Wade. It was an overreach when it was passed. It was a judicial fiat. It was not good law. This is an issue that rightly belongs in the states, and the states are voting. The states are, you know, look at Ohio, a fairly conservative state, came out strongly in support of abortion, and, you know, round of applause for them. But this belongs in the state courts or in the state's purview. It is a separation of powers issue, and you know, that's what I said.
I'm not a lawyer, so. Just spell out for me why it belongs in the states.
It's federal versus state.
Right.
Okay. National versus local. This is an issue that belongs in the domain of the individual states.
Because
our states are in the best position to listen and respond to what the constituents, the voters in that state want. There are some states that are much more conservative. There are states on the coasts, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, California, that are much more liberal. It's just the way this mud ball spins.
Right.
And that's what makes this a great republic. We are a representative republic. But that is a perfect example of taking one word out of a statement and turning it into, you know, evil red man. You know, but I digress. You know, so
the graphics are nice.
It's not bad. Hey, listen,
good design.
Any advertising is good advertising,
you go.
Right?
You know, it's a nice photo of you. They did, right?
Yeah, not terrible.
There you go.
So
and people don't read, so all they get is a flyer with your face and your name.
And my name. Yeah.
So all right. So
probably half the people think it's my flyer. Who the hell knows?
Right.
But so you know, these are important issues. You know, I joke around about it, but. When elected officials in our body of government do not do their job properly because they're worried about being reelected, we have a system where we simply must turn it over to the courts, and we give courts so much more than they really want to deal with.
Right,
and that's how our system is now run. So it's our own fault,
and they wind up legislating when they shouldn't.
Unfortunately, that's the case.
Yeah.
And that's what you're seeing. So now, you know, let's pack the court. Let's do this. Let's take the chief judge in the New York Court of Appeals and you know, make sure he's a team player. Again, as a lawyer, in law school, you read a lot of federal law decisions. The Supreme Court obviously is the highest court in the country. Then you have your circuits, okay, the Second Circuit here in New York, Federal Circuit. Then you have your very compelling state high courts. And the New York Court of Appeals, our highest court, has traditionally rendered decisions that are used as precedent around this country and are cited in federal decisions. Our court has always been of the highest caliber. And one party rule with Andrea Stewart Cousins leading the charge has attempted to destroy that. Okay. Mm-hmm. They took a judge who was eminently qualified and they eviscerated him and voted him down. And now we have a judge who basically follows the party line.
Right.
And that is a disgrace. As a lawyer, I find it offensive. And again, we have a bar association in New York City and state that is taking issues on Proposition 1 in particular that they have no business being involved in. Mm. This is a decision for voters to make, and their opinion pieces are essentially propaganda supporting this move. And, you know, just from a layman's perspective, when lawyers think something's good, you may want to think to yourself, what's in it for them?
Right.
And what's in it for the lawyers of the state of New York is a tremendous amount of litigation, right, and the dollars that that litigation is going to cost. So I have a 15-year-old daughter as well. I have two daughters.
You know the struggle.
You know, my boys are in Boy Scouts. She's been a Girl Scout. The Boy Scouts of America is now Scouting USA. I asked her if she wanted to join Scouting USA and go to the troop meeting with her brothers. And she looked at me and point blank said, no, I'm a girl. I will do Girl Scouts. I don't want to be in Scouting USA, right, with a bunch of boys. And, you know, we know historically boys and girls learn differently. They, right, they develop differently. You know, the maturity levels are different. And, you know, one size unfortunately does not fit all. And we have a society that is ramming that down our throats, that, yeah, everything has to be equality, everything has to be even. And, yeah, I mean, Prop 1.
My daughter made the same decision, by the way.
Yeah, no, Prop 1 is a bad set of regulations that will hit this state if they do. The other half of Prop 1 is country of origin will become a protected class. That means that everyone who's here who is not from here, okay, all of these people who were bussed in or flown in from other countries will have the protections and rights of every New York State resident. And in theory, a person from anywhere in the world could land at JFK Airport, process through customs, and as soon as they set foot on New York State soil, they have the same rights and protections as every citizen of this state. And if that doesn't terrify people, it should, because those people are taking away services and resources that were intended for the people of the state of New York. Okay, in court, PSNY, you as a prosecutor represent the people of the state of New York, the people who vote, the people who put you in this position, and in the case of a prosecutor, in this position of trust. And to to discount that, to make residents a footnote because of a political agenda, in my opinion, is disgraceful.
What service would you deny somebody that migrated here, that as opposed to a resident?
I don't believe it's a question of denying service as much as what level of service are you providing? Okay. A resident of New York, a person who's homeless, as they say, unsheltered at this point, you know, everything has to be politically correct. You know, we don't have drug addicts. We have opioid-dependent people or substance abuse, you know, people with a substance issue. No, you know, the guy out on Broadway who's got a needle sticking out of his arm is unfortunately somebody who you can call it anything you want,
right,
but you don't want it in your neighborhood. Right. I don't believe it's a question of denying services. You know, we are all in this human race together. Certainly, I don't want to see people suffering, but I do feel that as a resident, I should have a leg up over someone who showed up here from another country.
I guess what would that leg up look like, though? I mean,
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if I walk into DSS and I need services, I would think that I'd
go to
the head of the line.
Right.
You know, it's like veteran. Like when someone shows up at DSS and they're a veteran, there are certain programs that they have access to for veterans,
right,
that are beyond what a normal resident will get.
Right.
Okay. If you are the victim of a DV situation, you know, it's one thing if you're unhoused. It's another thing if you're unhoused because you got, you know, beat and your children were abused and you have to get out of that situation. In fact, I enjoy running for office. I can tell you specifically, you can't do this unless you enjoy it. I enjoy meeting people. I enjoy being out there and learning about people's issues and trying to assist them. It's probably why I got into being a volunteer firefighter when I was 18. But I can give you a very clear example of why I am doing this now and how serendipity works. I was at an event in the town of Ulster at Robert Post Park, and a young woman approached me, and she indicated to me that she was the victim of domestic violence, and she asked me if I could assist her. And I indicated to her that I have worked in the DV field in the DA's office in New York County, and I obviously couldn't help her at the, you know, I'm like literally about to speak at like a picnic.
Right.
But I gave her my card and I said, please call me. Text me your information. Let me see what I can do. And she was kicked out of her house with her children. And, you know, she spoke to me. She texted me the next day, told me who she was. She sent me a picture of her broken clavicle.
Ooh.
She sent me a picture of her son, one of her sons, whose wrist was...
Holy... I'm looking at a picture of it. Holy...
This was her neck.
Oh.
And this was the side of her face.
Oh.
And a local judge would not issue an order of protection.
Wouldn't issue an order
of
protection?
Would not issue an order of protection at that time. It was, again, I didn't have enough information. She's right. Approaching me at this event. But she spoke to me the next day. I put her in touch with some services. There are providers in this area, People's Place, Family of Woodstock, DSS. I won't go into the specifics of what services she availed herself of, but I learned from her after. So she did get services, and then she did get back into court, and a judge finally issued an order of protection in favor of her and her children.
You think?
And she was allowed to go back into her house, which was the appropriate outcome. But here's a young woman who's under a lot of stress, and she's living in her car, and she took her kids to this park just so they could play. They were young kids. And I said, come and get food, please. You know, let the kids play. And that's why I'm in this game. I guess that's a perfect example of somebody really at their wit's end and trying to provide them with the resources to make good decisions. Because of my background, I was able to help her
Right. Leverage
some of those things. And
thank you for doing that.
Literally last week, I'm in Hannaford, and she was walking down the aisle, and she said, we're going to court, and the judge, you know, is going to hear all the evidence. And then she did reach out to me to let me know that she was back in the house. And that's a great outcome. Yeah. But, you know, life is messy. Yeah. And frankly, it doesn't need to be any more messy courtesy of our elected officials. You know, I find it laughable that, you know, they are so proud, from state senators, state assembly members, congresspeople. This is the list of bills that I've brought before the esteemed halls here in Albany. I'd be happy if, you know, that old saying, more is better. I mean, I'd like government to do as little as possible and get out of my way.
Right.
And I think that's how most people feel. Okay. Yep. I want my water to be safe. I want my my food to be safe. I want to basically be allowed to engage in the free market to do what I can do. And, you know, unshackling business and allowing private sector jobs to be created by those who create them is how New York City got out of the rut when Rudy Giuliani became the mayor. You know, that's what we need. We need it. We need a modern version of Rudy without, like, you know, the ink in his hair. And
the Borat movie.
And
we don't need that either.
And we need it at the state level.
Right.
You know, it is, you know, Kathy Hochul was the accidental governor, you know, and I'm going to take a plug here, but Kamala is the accidental presidential candidate. I'm sorry. Okay. The guy who got the nomination and got those votes, you know, they ran out on a rail. So here we are.
That was a deal, though, right? I mean, the deal was, I'll leave, but you got to put my girl up. And
I don't know what the deal was, but I know that the deal is awful.
Yeah. One area where I disagree with you on, because I'm with you on almost everything here, bail, cash bail.
Okay.
I understand the argument that cash bail lets you get out of prison and participate in your defense at a greater extent than it does me if you can afford it and I can't. With the technology that we have now, where I can ankle bracelet you and I can track where you are every minute, I can put you under house arrest and not cost the taxpayer a dollar. I can, except for the ankle bracelet and the person monitoring it, I can let you go back and forth to work and know that you're doing it, and I can be made aware of when you violate that, and one violation and you're back in with no bail. Why isn't that a better system than inequality of you can afford it, I can't, you're out, and then get a better defense?
So I need to sharpen my axe here. So you're aware, my thesis in law school was on the Bail Reform Act in the 60s, and I got an A+.
Well done.
Just a plug. Thank you, Professor Hutter, Steve Hutter. I think it was Steve Hutter. Anyway, okay. The purpose of bail is to ensure your return to court. Okay, that is the simplest definition.
Right.
Bail is designed to make sure you come back to court. There are technologies out there that can do exactly what you're saying. It goes back to Prop 1. It goes back to throwing the baby out with the bathwater, shooting first and then asking questions. Bail is extremely complicated, and having arraigned countless thousands of people, okay, I worked in the arraignment part in the criminal courts. I've arraigned from disorderly conduct to 4 defendant homicides, okay? I would personally, working in Queens or in New York County, see how we operated. Okay, you came in, you were accused of X, and we made a bail recommendation. And ultimately, a lot of cases plead out, and you'd see the plea, and you'd see what they were sentenced to. Okay, I would come home and cut my grass up here in Ruby on my days off. And I would, at that time, open the Daily Freeman, which was a local newspaper that exists, you know, only in people's memories and online at this point. And I would read the police beat. Okay, you know, there were only two things people read. Well, obituaries and police beat were like the top two. Okay,
right.
So I would see circumstances where a defendant charged in Ulster County, convicted in Ulster County, sentenced in Ulster County, would face a much more severe bail recommendation, a much more severe sentence than we would be dealing with in the city. Let's take the exact same fact pattern. A known drug user enters the apartment of his drug dealer because of a dispute between them over whatever he was sold. That drug user steals a flat-screen TV, exits the house, sells the TV on the street for like $50. But that gets him enough money to get another bag of junk. They arrest drug user. He is taken to trial. Drug dealer testifies against drug user. And drug user is sentenced. Okay? In Queens County, that person would likely go, let's say they had a prior record. That person, bail recommendation, let's say, would be $5,000. In Ulster County, the bail recommendation prior to bail reform might be $150,000.
Mm.
Okay. Or let's make it easy. $50,000.
Okay.
Much harder threshold to meet. Go to trial. Found guilty at trial. Okay. Let's assume that drug dealer testifies against drug user. They have the evidence. They know that this guy did it. The jury comes back and he is found guilty.
Right.
Then we come back to sentencing. In Queens County, the sentence might be 2 1/3 to 5.
Okay.
In Ulster County, because we're hard on criminals up here, you know, that sentence might be 8 to 12 years.
Mm.
Justice was not equal under those circumstances.
Right.
There was a need for reform. The reforms that we got are destroying our ability to prosecute. And it's not so much bail. It's discovery. Discovery reform has crippled district attorney's offices.
Mm.
Prior to bail reform, you turned over exculpatory information and evidence of the crime to the defendant on the eve of trial.
Okay. That's not a bunch of time.
No, it's plenty of time because it's, again, 90%, 85 or 90% of cases plead out.
Right.
Okay, cops arrest you. You know, you're in possession of the TV. Like, right. You didn't get to fence it. You're walking down the street with a TV. They stop you. You're now in custody. They've got the evidence. They got the eyewitness. Let's say they got a Ring camera. Okay. Excuse me. When those circumstances occur, we face a need to turn over the materials relevant to the crime as a prosecutor.
Right.
Under the old system, let's face it, you're the guy. You're the defendant.
Right.
You know you did it.
Right.
They caught you with the TV.
Right.
You know that somebody saw you. You know that there was probably a video. So at the end of the day, if you can cut a decent plea, you're going to be like, all right, fine. If I plead to this and we don't have to go to trial, which costs the people money.
Right.
You know, if you're looking at 8 years in Ulster County, how about you do 2 1/3 to 5 and you go away?
Right.
Most defendants would take that kind of a deal.
Right.
What changed under bail reform is the discovery must be turned over within 10 days of the offense and the charge. So what you're seeing is, and now think about all the technology you talked about. Every police officer is wearing a body camera.
Right.
Every police car has a camera.
Right.
There are multiple streetlights on Broadway that have cameras. Let's say right outside of this building, you are assaulted getting into your car. Police show up. The person is arrested. Every single camera that may have caught it, may have, not even the ones that actually did or didn't, every single camera within this zone has to be turned over to the defense attorney within 10 days.
Right.
Every statement made. If EMS showed up and you refuse medical attention, They need a statement from the person driving that ambulance that you refused. They need all of the evidence, good, bad, and ugly, in order to move forward with that case. And they need to do it right now. And what we're seeing is DA's offices simply don't have the resources. The police departments don't have the resources. And so
right.
you're the person who assaulted you outside, under these conditions, is much more likely to face no consequence for having committed that assault. That's the reality of what bail reform has done.
Right.
So,
but the flip side of that is, I think, it works when I did steal the TV. But when I look like the guy who stole the TV and I only get the evidence the night before a trial, now I'm screwed.
Again, that is the exception, not the rule.
Right.
Okay, you know, there are always going to be exceptional circumstances where people are jammed up for things that didn't occur. But, you know, I'm sure you raised your kids the way I raised mine. You do something bad, you have a consequence.
Right.
Okay. Under these circumstances, we are creating a generation of offenders who really don't face any consequence. And it's a multiple-factored event. The cop is less likely to put you in handcuffs
because he knows he's got five days of work.
Well, no, you'll be out on the street before he's done with your paperwork.
Right.
Okay. You know, I had a kid break into a cash box at a business I run. It's on camera. I mean, you know, and the kid was caught, but what are you going to do? Nothing. He's underage. No. There's no consequence, you know. So I didn't follow up with it. I just let it go. But this is the problem. Now that young man got a $20 bill out of a cash box, and there was no consequence.
What does that teach him?
Correct. Right. What is now we're reinforcing bad behavior.
Right.
And, you know, that's part of the problem. I can vividly remember two young kids in Queens went into some leather shop, like for leather jackets and stuff. And they stole two jackets that were really like super expensive. They were some kind of sports team memorabilia, like custom jackets. They were like $1,500 a piece. And they were kids. I mean, they were like barely 17 or 18, whatever they were. And no one in the courtroom, okay, from the judge to me as the prosecutor to the defense attorney for each of the boys to the probation department, which provided a CJA. They provided a report on community ties, family, stuff like that. No one wanted these kids to get jammed up. And so we gave them like a ton of community service, and they were terrified. When they stood up in front of the judge and we made this arrangement to basically give them community service, their knees were practically knocking.
Mm.
That's what you're looking for. You want them to understand, wow, this was not a very smart idea. You know, sitting inside the pen with, you know, really bad people. When you are in arraignment, like in the pen where everybody's held, here are two kids who did something stupid and stole like these jackets that they were never going to get away with. And, you know, they're sitting next to a guy who like slit somebody's throat. I mean, that's how it works. And it's terrifying inside those cells. And, you know, here's your bologna sandwich. Mm. You know, we'll see you in like 12 hours. You really are like, wow, I don't like this. I don't like having my liberty taken from me. We don't take liberty anymore. You know, you do bad things and you get like an appearance ticket. There's really no consequence. And even a little bit of a consequence where you are told by a police officer, you can't leave. And now I'm going to put you in cuffs. And now I'm going to put you in the back of this car and you can't get out of this car. And now I'm going to walk you into a station and I'm going to chain you to a bench. And however long that process takes, if you've never been in that situation, you're like, wow, I don't like this. Mm-hmm. I don't like this one bit.
Right.
And I never, you know, when you finally like dust yourself off and you get the hell out of there, you're like, wow, I really don't want to do this again.
Right.
Okay, so there is a benefit to that learning curve, and some people learn it real quick, and some people don't learn it at all.
Right.
And that's just human nature.
Right.
So, you know, we needed some reform. I will be the first one to say that. But we have gone far beyond the scope and the discovery circumstances that DA's offices and police agencies face is unprecedented and unnecessary. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you look at police agency budgets, if you look at the Ulster County DA's office budget, they have added a number of staffers to handle this IT data. They have to provide the data. And right. there is no exemption. Okay. It's not like, well, you got us 80% of the stuff. You know, the other 20% can get it by like the end of the week. No, it's black and white. You're either provide the information or it's gone.
Right.
And that is why you see in a lot of cases, they don't make the arrest until they've gotten more evidence. So again, in a situation where like this woman, where she's been beaten, that guy may not be arrested at the scene for that assault because they want to make sure they have enough evidence. And I understand their reasoning. But how about that poor woman and her kids when this guy is walking around like the Cheshire Cat and like acts like he's impervious? Because he is.
Right.
You know, it's you know, none of this is simple. Yeah, life is messy. But our government, you know, what's that saying? You know, I'm with the government. I'm here to help. That's the last thing you want to hear. Okay. They, with the best of intentions, you know, they're burning New York State down. Mm.
The arts in the Hudson Valley are, and I say this all the time, I'll just use musicianship because you sing. The per capita ratio of really talented musicians in the Hudson Valley is ridiculous compared to elsewhere. I've been elsewhere. Would you how do we support the arts in the Hudson Valley in the district that you're running for?
We already do.
What do we do?
The film tax credit is massive.
Okay.
Okay, I'm in SAG-AFTRA, full disclosure. What we give away for film production is just beyond the scope.
That's good to hear.
No, it's actually
it's not good to hear.
It's not good to hear.
Because we give away too much.
We give away the store.
Okay.
You know, I worked in economic development for Ulster County for a period of time. I was director of business development for the Ulster County Development Corporation. Business development in New York State is like military intelligence. It's an oxymoron, okay? you do business in New York because you want to be here. You have a compelling need to be here or you have a compelling desire to be here. Right. We are one of the highest tax states in the country. Our energy costs are the highest in the country, okay? Power and water, sewer. Why would you be here? You'd be here because you have to be close to your market. You have to be close to the major markets, or you just simply want to be here.
Legacy.
And that is a huge problem that that every business faces. But, you know, I think we do a great job of supporting the arts with – and certainly we should do it with less money to the film industry. But, you know, the Hudson Valley is a very unique area. The Culinary Institute, like all of these restaurants have CIA grads.
Yeah.
Okay, Culinary Institute of America grads. Okay, you can't, you know, throw stone around Kingston and not hit a CIA grad because they come here,
right?
They love the area and then they want to be here and right. And that's what happens. You know, so you know while a CIA diploma, whatever it is, endorsement, if you're in Boise. This is, well, I went to the Culinary Institute. You know, it's pretty good.
Right.
You know, but I mean, unless you went to the Cordon Bleu, you know, right. Nobody cares. Okay, it's like, yeah, okay. You know, right. The guy who's working at like Michael's Diner might have gone to the CIA.
Right.
So you know,
he's in your class.
We have we are blessed with a very creative culture here in the Hudson Valley, particularly in Kingston. You know, it's one of the reasons I'm advertising on WDST plug for DST.
Nice.
You know, because it's a creative – people who listen to DST are typically – certainly more on the left-leaning side.
Right.
But they're creative people. And when we ran the ad for the first week, people, like, called the station and were like, that's pretty cool. And, you know, I listen to the radio all the time. And listening to these really distasteful – negative ads, it turns your stomach. You know,
yeah. I'm Pat Ryan and I approve this message,
as he just essentially lied through his teeth about his opponent or whomever. You can say it about all of these candidates. Okay, my ad is a jingle. It's non-offensive. If it offends anybody, then something's wrong. You know, and it's just, hey, I'm trying to get my message out there. Right. I'm a local guy. I'd like you to remember me on Election Day. That's pretty much it. But the level...
I will insert your jingle right here when we...
Oh, thank you.
What is America to me? A name, a map, or a flag I see? A certain word, democracy. What is America to me? The house I live in, a plot of earth, the street, the grocer and the butcher, and the people that I meet, the children in the playground, the faces that I see, all races and religions, that's America to me. A place I work in, a worker by my side, a little town or city, where my people lived and died. The howdy and the handshake, the air of feeling free, and the right to speak my mind out, that's America to me. The things I see about me, the big things and the small, the little corner newsstand, or the house a mile tall, the wedding and the churchyard, the laughter and the tears, and the dream that's been a-growing for 250 years. The town I live in, the street, the house, the room, the pavement of the city, or a garden all in bloom, the church, the school, the clubhouse, the million lights I see, but especially the people, that's America to me.
But, you know, the level of vitriol that
well,
is...
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about, that piece that you showed me.
Yeah.
In what planet does somebody think, like if she was sitting here, in what planet does somebody think you win and you have to work with Democrats now, and it's going to be without any tint of anything because you can just brush that off while your kids are seeing it?
Listen, I consider it a badge of honor. I mean, no one's ever done, you know, a hit piece on me before, so I must be doing something
well,
right.
Right. I said it about I have an internet troll. Same thing. I'm big enough that I can have a troll. But no, but like it's so short term thinking to do something like that because even if you don't win, you're around. You're going to win eventually. Then you know, and now how do you bridge that? Or can politicians, do they have just like a switch where they go, okay, that was the war, now we're not, and...
You know, I think you have to be practical about your approach to running. You have to be practical about your approach to being an elected official. Once the election is over, if you are the winner, if you are the successful party, you have an obligation to represent everybody in that district.
Right.
So that includes the people who didn't vote for you. And
right.
So.
But that's different than.
No, but no, it's really not. I mean, you know.
But in order to represent them, you got to work with the people who wrote that.
Yeah, who dimed you out. I mean, but that's part of the game. You know, there's nothing you can do about it. It is what it is.
Right.
You know.
Well, you could also just be smarter and not do stuff like that.
Well, you would hope that people would take the higher road. They take the higher road until they feel threatened. And
right. Clearly
I did something right. I'm telling you, it was the jingle. And and my station wagon.
Yes.
My 1973 Buick State Wagon with
nice.
The sign on the roof.
All right. I grew up with a 1972 Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser.
Everybody, everybody loves it. Yep. Okay, I had a woman over in Red Hook. There was a community day. It's called Hardscrabble Day in Red Hook, and I pulled up, and I swear I parked there 2 years ago. It's with my vehicle. The Democrats set up on this one corner, and I parked right there, and they were setting up their tent and their stuff, and I get out of the car, and I got the sign on the roof, you know, Apache and New York State Senate. And this woman says, "Excuse me, you can't park there." And I looked at her, and I looked at the road sign that said, 2 hour parking, don't park from here to the corner. And I'm like, "That sign says I can park here, lady."
Turns out
and she's like, "You know, you're just, you know," she made some not nice comments. And right. I'm like, "Whatever." So I walked across the street to where the Republicans had set up their tent. And I kind of had a good laugh about it. You know, I left the car there for like 3 hours. They put up – they took like a bed sheet or something and put it –
what?
They strung it on the curbside between these two little pop-ups so that it would somehow block the car.
Are you serious?
I swear to God. And it was just hysterical. And then she went on Facebook.
Oh, God.
And she posted about how mean I was or some nonsense. And it was the funniest thing. Honestly, I would honestly thank her. The reality was she posted on Facebook, I think, a picture of the car. And she's like, this guy riding around in his, like, you know, National Lampoon's station wagon. And, you know, his jingle. I've heard a lot of, you know, political ads, and, you know, this is ridiculous. But you know what?
It's working.
She knows my jingle.
Yep.
She knows my car.
That's why.
Okay,
yeah.
So how...
Right. How is that not smart?
Exactly. No, yeah. It was honestly hysterical.
That's funny.
So, you know, you got to have fun with it. I mean, honestly, on a personal note, I admire and respect Michelle Henchy. She's a talented young woman. She has a bright future. She's done good things for the district. However, her vote record is whatever Andrea Stewart Cousins and the Democrat machine tell her to do.
Right.
And she is not, in my opinion, representing her constituents.
Right.
We're one big happy here. And maybe we're one big unhappy. But we are one group of people in these four counties. We should not be polarized on issues of importance to the district, okay? Mm-hmm. Getting sewer lines where they need sanitary sewer. Getting funding for various projects of importance in the district. You know, that's what you're there for.
Right.
And then your vote has to reflect all of the values in your district. You know, I'm not looking for a Bernie Sanders. I'm not looking for a Sarah Hanna. And unfortunately, you know, when I look at the way Michelle votes, I can't support the way she votes. And that's why I am on this line. As I've said, you know, if you think we're in great shape, then she's the person you should be voting for. I think we've already gone down the rabbit hole. I'd like us to see daylight.
Right. How's it looking so far? Do you have polls? Is there even such a thing?
You know, the polls are, they've been done over the past couple of months. You know, surprise, surprise, I'm the underdog.
Okay.
I mean, how close we are is anybody's guess. And it all, you know, it's a horse race until, you know, 9:01 p.m. on November 5th.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll see how it goes. But I am enjoying this role. And I think you have to enjoy this if you truly want to represent the people. You have to enjoy doing this job, and the job is to get elected, and then you get to represent people. You know, I've said it before in some of my some of the articles that have been written. I was at Mass down at Immaculate Conception a couple of weeks back, and the pastor was talking about elected officials and their role. And, you know, again, it's Mass, so they're talking about, you know, Christ-like and things like that. That an elected official is a servant leader, that you serve in the way Christ served, in the way we serve one another to do good things, and that is the true message of an elected official, is a servant leader. And I really thought about it, and I take that message to heart. I hope that I can be that person if I am, you know, blessed to become the senator on November 5th. But so few people in our society, I believe, hold that value. You have, and I've said it, servants to their stock portfolio, you know, Nancy Pelosi, servants to their blind ambition, you know, Andrew Cuomo. To be a servant leader is the ultimate goal and the highest value for going into politics. That's my position. And I wish more people took it at that level and really looked at it that way, because we would, as a society, be much better off if our elected officials behaved that way, mm-hmm. across the board. Okay, Democrat, Republican, whatever. And, you know, that is my hope. And I guess we'll find out on Election Day.
What's the website?
Sheehan, S-H-E-E-H-A-A-N, Sheehan, 4, F-O-R, N-Y. Sheehan4NY.com. We got a couple of videos on there. I sing. I have an actual song coming out. I think I sent you the song.
Yep.
Did I send you the song?
I don't think so. You sent me the jingle.
I sent you the jingle. Okay, I'll send you the song. I sing a song at all my events. I sing. It's the Irish in me. But I really sing one particular song called The House I Live In, which was performed during the Second World War by Frank Sinatra. And it's very important today. It's about anti-Semitism. It came out during the war to explain to the American public in like a 10-minute reel. You know, they would show these little movies, these like mini movies between like double features.
Right.
You know, they'd do like the news of the day and they'd do these little reels. And The House I Live In was this sort of 10-minute movie. You can look it up online with Frank Sinatra, where he sings this song about anti-Semitism and how what we were doing in Europe and in the Pacific Theater was to prevent the harassment, intimidation, and, you know, persecution of those less fortunate, and including those of Jewish faith. And, you know, fast forward to 2024, I'm singing that song because it's as important today, post October 7th, as it was in 1943, 44, when it came out.
That's beautiful, man. I think you're fantastic. I really do.
Haven't met my wife.
she probably thinks you're fantastic, too.
No comment.
Fair enough. Elections November 5th. I'm going to try to get the show up as fast as I can.
Cool.
For you. And,
that's great.
And if you want to come back, by all means, man.
You know, hopefully we have good news. And if we don't, you know, maybe we'll engage in, like, you know, good cop, bad cop. We can talk politics. And,
fair enough.
You know, make this thing go global.
We are global, actually. all right, man. Thank you so much. Pat
Sheehan.
Vote November 5th.
Vote November 5th. And or early.
Read more of his positions on the website.
Correct.
And he's a good man.
Get out the vote. I mean, everybody, you know, people need to vote. That is our biggest Achilles heel. We take our freedoms for granted, and we shouldn't. We, you know, it is a privilege for those of us who live in this country to vote. And when you talk to people from other countries who've naturalized, they recognize just how fortunate the people of this country are. And we can only be free if we get out and we elect good people to do the job we want them to do. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Pat Sheehan's a good guy. Thanks. Good?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Oh, good.
Thank you. Thank you.